This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hinch has named his opening day pitcher, and for the 11th time in his 15 major league seasons.
I'm on the edge of my seat, Sean.
Brad Peacock. No, it will be Justin Verlander.
Shocking. Yep. Absolutely shocking.
Justin Verlander will be the opening day starter for the Houston Astros. The question becomes, will the Astros come to an agreement on some sort of extension with Justin Verlander before he makes his 11th opening day start of his career? He's kind of sprinkled it out there, Rich, that he would be open to talking about it.
He's told John Heyman that he even though he's not happy with the current state of the market, he realizes the realities of that market and that he may have to settle for something less than a five-year deal, maybe a two-year deal, which, you know, I think bodes well for the Astros' chances of holding on to Verlander beyond this season.
Obviously, they're the only team that can talk to him about this right now because he's under contract. So you take advantage of that ability to talk to him about it. And you find out truly, is he open to a one-year deal or a two-year deal? And I'll say this, if he's open to a one-year deal, Rich, I would give him a one-year deal. Before the start of this season, if you want to extend him for a year, I would give him a one-year deal for $35 million.
In a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat. The highest paid player in baseball on a per-year basis is Zach Greinke right now, who makes $34.4 million a year. I would make Justin Verlander the highest on an annual basis.
Yep.
The highest paid player in baseball for a year, 1 year, $35 million. Because if you're the Astros, I think you need to look at this window right now similar to the way that the Texans need to look at their window with Deshaun Watson on a rookie deal. You've got Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa on what are the baseball equivalent of rookie deals. You know, still either under the minimum or early on in arbitration. And Verlander is, I think Verlander at age 36, Rich, I think is as safe a bet as there is to be an elite pitcher.
And you're right. Wrapping him up so that he's guaranteed to be here two more years ensures that you'll have a Cy Young contender fronting your rotation for a two-year period, which could mark the end of the Astros as we know them. And I don't mean anything as dramatic as that sounds, but I think after 2020, it's in play that there could be some significant changes.
Yeah, I do too, because you've got a bunch of players who are going to be coming up for big extensions at some point.
They can't keep everybody. We know that.
Yeah, you can't keep everybody. And I think Verlander and Cole, to me, as great as this team is going to be offensively, Rich, and they're stacked, let's face it. When this team's healthy around the infield from left to right, Bregman, Correa, Altuve, and Gurriel, and then the outfield of Brantley and Springer and Reddick. Those position players, they are so stacked offensively, but the differentiator for this team and what's ultimately going to decide their success in the postseason, other than health, because health is what got them last year, is the two-headed hammer at the top of the rotation with Verlander and Cole. And if there's something you can do to extend that window with at least one of those guys, then you do it. And I think if you're Verlander, it would be nice to know that you're not going to go back out into that marketplace for another season, too.
Yeah.
Verlander's tweets about the marketplace that while on the surface he looks like he's sticking up for all these guys like Harper and Machado and Keuchel and everybody else, I think there's part of it, too. There's some self-preservation. For those who don't know, Justin Verlander has been one of the most vocal current players about this just new free agency world that we live in where teams are taking forever to sign marquee guys. And guys are still, the high-level guys are still getting money. We'll talk about Keuchel in a second because it looks like the middle class is a little bit exposed right now. But I think part of that, too, with Verlander and putting that out there, Rich, I mean, let's not get it twisted. Some of that is self-preservation and selfishly him putting it out there, hoping that something turns with this market when it's his turn to be those guys.
I think Dallas Keuchel, by the way, would chafe at your characterization of him as middle class.
Well, I'm not. You know who's characterizing him as that?
The market's determining that. I get it, but he certainly doesn't consider himself that. There's no way. And this whole Verlander
take it up with the 30 teams in MLB.
Exactly. This whole Verlander situation. If they were in a position, and they are, let's face it, to make an offer like that and lock him up so that he's going to be here a couple of more years, you know, maybe that impacts the Gerrit Cole situation, because for those who don't know, he's also scheduled to be a free agent after 2019. Much younger player, probably, I'm going to guess, even though Verlander has said, quote, I'm going to play into my 40s, and he's only 35 right now, I feel like Cole is going to be more adamant about a 4 or 5 year deal.
He should be.
As opposed to a 1 or 2 year deal. So maybe if you're the Astros, if you've got Verlander locked up through 2020, maybe you feel you're in a position to offer Cole that 4 or 5 year deal he's looking for, and you find a way to keep both of them in an Astros uniform. That would be quite a coup for the Astros.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how extending Verlander by one more year makes it more likely that you get Cole signed to a deal.
Because you wouldn't be making the long-term commitment to Verlander.
Oh, if you're going to keep both of them, keep one short and one longer.
It may be a path to keeping both of them, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, see, I just think it's going to be really tough to keep both guys, even with Verlander on a short-term deal.
It's definitely going to be tough.
Yeah.
But it feels like it opens up some possibilities.
Well, and then there's the Dallas Keuchel issue, which we just alluded to. Keuchel still sits out there on the open market. And, man, there was a piece that I read about Keuchel on ESPN.com. On the insider page there by Buster Olney about how the market just dried up on Dallas Keuchel. And man, Scott Boras, he hired Scott Boras to be his agent specifically to get queued up for this offseason. And as much credit as – and we need to wait and see how it plays out. Who knows? Keuchel may wind up getting a deal like Jake Arrieta did last year from the Phillies.
I'm not seeing it.
3 years. I don't either, Rich. But, until we see where Keuchel signs and for how much – I'm not ready to bury Scott Boras. However, if it turns out that all Keuchel gets is a 1 or 2 year deal for what he thinks is below market, hell, if he gets a 1 year deal for less than the qualifying offer, it's an unmitigated disaster
completely for
Dallas Keuchel. And as much credit as Scott Boras gets for being this bulldog that goes out and gets guys their money, Bryce Harper and other players,
right. He's
Jose Altuve's agent as well. It's appearing that the possession arrow is solidly pointed that Dallas Keuchel has been done wrong by this process of Scott Boras digging his heels in.
So far, yes. The qualifying
Keuchel's
offer,
complicit. I mean, he's still the boss of this whole thing.
The qualifying offer, if I'm not mistaken, that he turned down was like $17 million in change. Maybe $17.9 million.
Yeah, $17.9 million.
$17.9 million he turned down. And we should mention that Ken Rosenthal from The Athletic tweeted earlier today, that it's his understanding that the Astros, as has been reported by many people, have stayed in touch with Dallas Keuchel. But Rosenthal today went so far as to tweet that he's been offered separate 1 and 2 year proposals by the Astros to come back to Houston. No numbers have been disclosed as to what they may be offering. Like we've mentioned, the qualifying offer that he turned down was $17.9 million. I'd love to know what the 1 and the 2 year offers, what kind of money we're talking about. And we should also mention that if the Astros should find a way to bring Dallas Keuchel back, they have to factor into this whole equation. They will no longer receive the draft pick compensation they would have had he gone somewhere else.
Yeah, the way it works is in baseball, so people know, when a free agent, a marquee free agent like that signs with another team, you get their pick, their first-round pick. It's not like the NFL where they just create picks out of thin air and it's compensatory like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if I'm Jeff Luhnow, you look at it and you take a look at what the crop of players looks like this year, and you start to figure, you know, who the suitors are for Keuchel. I'll say this, Rich. If you bring back Keuchel, let's pretend you bring him back on a 1 year deal that looks a lot like the qualifying offer for a second. You know, 1 year, $18 million he comes back for. Then you've got Verlander, Cole. You have Keuchel. And you have a motivated Dallas Keuchel. I would imagine Keuchel coming back on a 1 year deal is going to be looking, and I'm not saying Keuchel was an unmotivated player before. Obviously, he couldn't be any more motivated than he was this past season, but he didn't have a great season. He had a season where he looks like a upper middle class workhorse. He pitched a bunch of innings, which was good for Keuchel, that he made all his scheduled starts. I think if you're deep down and you're Keuchel and you're Scott Boras having private conversations, my guess is Boras said, hey, look, up until now, the only real questions about you have been injuries and durability, and you prove the durability thing. Don't worry about that 3.74 ERA.
Well, that's
you're going to get paid by somebody.
Hey, in 2018, 3.74 is nothing to be embarrassed about. And Keuchel led the American League with those 34 starts. So, yes, he's put that to rest.
He did, but unfortunately, we live in a different baseball world now, Rich, where there are other things that are valued over durability and answering the bell and eating up innings. Because most starters only go five or six innings now because teams, they overuse their bullpens or they micromanage their bullpen. So that's not as the innings part is not as valued as skill. And unfortunately for Keuchel, what's valued in this offseason is, one, youth. He's 31 years old. That's not young. And two, velocity. And that,
yeah, I think the velocity thing's overrated. I know it's down a skosh with Dallas Keuchel. He's never been a pitcher who relied on any sort of overpowering velocity to be successful. He's a guy who works the corners, gets a lot of ground balls. I think the other analytics are far more at play here when we talk about some of the reluctance on teams. Because I think, yes, the age indicates he might be hitting a period of decline, an inevitable period of decline. But some of the other numbers, not called velocity, but the ground ball rate, the strikeout rate, there's even more, you know, involved analytics on his performance that suggest that he may be in decline as a pitcher. I think the velocity is overrated, but I think some of these other metrics are working against him because he's down in some key areas.
Yeah, I feel like if Buster Olney is saying that the velocity is working against him, my guess is he's talking to teams out there. I agree with you a little bit that it's overrated.
I do, guys.
But if Buster Olney's saying it in this article, and let's face it, it's not like he was 22nd out of 57 pitchers, and now he's 27th. He's like bottom three in Major League Baseball.
But people with more time on their hands than me have done the homework on this velocity thing and determined there are quite a few pitchers in that same range velocity-wise that are getting paid. Why? Because they're younger.
Yeah, the age probably works more against them than that maybe. And I'd welcome him back to the Astros on a shorter-term deal. Or if they wanted to do a two-year deal, and then you do that deal we're talking about with Verlander, and then if Cole does leave, you've at least still got a top of the rotation that's Verlander and Keuchel. I just wonder, Rich, if let's pretend Dallas Keuchel comes back on a one-year deal.
Yeah, let's do that, because the Astros clearly would have the best starting five in the sport.
Well, I'm talking more about Keuchel's perspective here is where I wanted to go with this. And let's pretend he comes back on a one-year deal and has a year where he's really good. He wins 17 or 18 games. His ERA is down in the low threes. Does he automatically just go onto the market and then someone's going to pay him the deal he was looking for this summer? Because all he did was get a year older probably in a lot of teams' eyes.
Yeah.
He may be in this weird sort of career purgatory right now where unless he goes and wins a Cy Young, he may never see the type of money that he was probably promised by Scott Boras when he signed with him.
Maybe not.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, if age is the overriding thing working against him, that's the one thing that he can't turn back. Like, he can increase his velocity maybe through weight training and things like that. He can show that he's still really durable. He's not going to come back next offseason after having a good year for the Astros or anybody on a one-year deal and all of a sudden be 29 years old.
Right.
He's going to be 32 years old. It's a fascinating case study, and then the fact that the Astros are integrally involved in it, not just from the fact that this is the only team he's ever played for, but by, like you said, reportedly, there are talks going on to bring him back here. How weird would that feel if Dallas Keuchel were all of a sudden back with the Houston Astros?
I think it'd be fantastic, because like I said, Verlander, Cole, Keuchel, Miley, McHugh might be the best starting five in baseball.
Do you move McHugh back into the bullpen or Peacock? Or do you let the two of them duke it out in spring training?
They're both guys that can do either and perform at a pretty high level for you. I don't know why, but I consider Peacock more that jack of all trades than McHugh. And McHugh's had some really significant success as a starter.
Well, the thing about McHugh and Peacock is that Peacock has proven that within a season he can go back and forth starter and bullpen.
Yeah. And it's not going to impact.
McHugh's done both, but it's been over an entire season.
Yeah, I would choose McHugh as my fifth starter in that scenario.
I think McHugh would want to be the fifth starter because he is an unrestricted free agent after the season.
That will help him as well, yes.
Yep. All right, so what are all these things they're doing over at Constellation Field you were telling me about, Rich?
This story actually came down last week, and I was fascinated by it, not just because of the elements of the story, but also because of the ramifications for the sport of baseball and maybe even beyond the sport of baseball. But last week, a three-year partnership was announced between Major League Baseball and the Atlantic League. And for those who don't know, the Sugarland Skeeters are one of eight teams in the Atlantic League of Baseball. It's an independent league.
Mostly East Coast, right?
Most of the teams are in the Northeast. There's a team in Maryland, a team in North Carolina, but the rest are New York, New Jersey, or Pennsylvania.
Right.
And among the things that were speculated on when this partnership was announced was that the Atlantic League would, as part of the deal with Major League Baseball, adopt some rule changes, adopt some the use of some technology as a way for Major League Baseball to observe the impact of these changes, and it's going to happen. So I guess what I'm saying is if you go to a Skeeters game in Sugar Land this season at Constellation Field, you're going to be at a game where the TrackMan radar system is helping umpires determine balls and strikes.
I would go just to see how that gets executed.
Now, all they're saying now is helping umpires call balls or strikes. So I don't know the extent to which they're going to rely on this technology. I wish they would say, and at some point I'm sure they will, if the technology, if TrackMan's actually going to call balls and strikes.
Or they're just in their ear.
Are they just clarifying close calls?
Yeah.
I much rather would like to see an experiment in which umpires wear headsets and somebody behind home plate that's monitoring the TrackMan radar system just says ball, strike, ball, and see how it develops moving forward. Because the technology does now exist. This is the same technology that tennis uses.
Yeah.
That determines on a replay in almost real time whether a ball has hit the line or come down outside the line. And that's really, really, really accurate technology.
The classic part about all this is that if a manager or a pitcher disagrees with a ball and strike call, usually they walk right out to the guy who's accountable for the call.
Yeah.
Now they'd be walking out to the home plate umpire, and the umpire would just be pointing up at the booth like, hey, take it up with that guy three levels up behind that glass up there.
You got a problem with TrackMan? Enable TrackMan to have some voice technology where he can say, you have been ejected.
Exactly.
I think it's awesome. I can't wait to see what the impact of it might be, what the umpires feel about it, and whether or not Major League Baseball will consider.
I'm not wild about it. I'm a human being guy.
I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you won't have home plate umpires. It just means the strike zone would be taken out of their hands.
The other one you were telling me about, I think, is going to be one where people are going to protest.
There's a handful of other changes. I'll point out a couple that are going to get talked about a lot.
Okay.
The Atlantic League is outlawing shifts, which means that you must have two infielders on either side of second base at all times, or the batter at the plate is assessed an additional ball in the count.
I'm down with that.
The penalty
I'm
is
anti-shift.
A ball. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the shift, but I defend the right to shift.
I don't use guns, but I defend the Second Amendment.
I think managers should be allowed to implement shifts.
Okay.
The other one that's really radical, they're moving the mound back 2 feet in the second half of the season.
I can't believe that.
I'm not sure. I don't know why they're waiting until the halfway point of the Atlantic League season, but halfway through the season, the mound will go from being 60 feet 6 inches to home plate to 62 feet 6 inches to home plate, which sounds like a gigantic, enormous adjustment for pitchers that I think could lead to pitchers hurting themselves.
I hope they do it just so we can see. I think it'd be a fascinating experiment. I'm with you. When you told me that during the break, I'm going, holy crap, if I were a pitcher, I would get out of the Atlantic League right now.
Yes.
I mean, that feels dangerous,
yes.
Right?
The other two, no mound visits.
Okay.
No mound visits other than for pitching changes and injured players.
I'm down with that, too.
No strategical visits to the mound at all.
Sounds good to me.
Of course, Major League Baseball last year limited them for the first time.
Right.
Now they're eliminating them in this minor league to see how it works out.
I'm down.
And the other one that I think is fascinating is when you make a pitching change, the new pitcher is on a three-batter minimum before you can make another pitching
MLB
change.
MLB had discussed that one.
They're thinking about that,
I don't
yes.
like that one either.
No, I don't like that.
As much as I like the game to be sped up, I'm okay with the pitching changes for this, for strategic reasons. But getting rid of the mound visits will shave down the time that I'm looking to be shaved out of there.
62 feet 6 inches.
That's
though,
rich. That's
from the mound to home plate. Feels like the CFL end zone.
Except you don't have to use your hamstrings harder to get into a CFL end zone.
Right.
That is nuts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.